We would like this morning to turn to the book of Esther, chapter 4. That's book of Esther, chapter 4. It's between Nehemiah and Job. I'm sure most of you know that. But the book of Esther, chapter 4, we'll read verses 10 through verse 17. Again, Esther spake unto Hatak and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except to such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these many days. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, "Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer, "Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise. And so will I go unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. We have preached from this passage in the past. The book of Esther is an unusual book in the fact that the name of God is never mentioned in the whole book. The only book in the Bible in which we have no mention of a name of God. But God is in the book of Esther. As you read the book of Esther, you see God's hand of providence throughout the book. In fact, the lesson of the book is God is sovereign. God is sovereign in all the nations of the world, and people should surrender and trust to Him. That's the lesson that is brought out in the book of Esther. In our text, the verses that we've just read, Mordecai is trying to convince Esther to go before the king on behalf of the Lord's people and for the honor and glory of God. He says to her in verse 14, "And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" And with those words, Mordecai issued a challenge to Esther. Mordecai was hoping that God would speak to Esther, that God would get a hold of her heart, that God would stir Esther to action. With those words, Mordecai is basically saying to Esther, "Esther, God has a purpose, and by God's all-wise providence, you are in the position that you are in for such a time as this." What he is saying to Esther is, "Esther, you are here at this time for a God reason. Seize the moment. Take the opportunity that God has given you." He is saying, "Esther, you have a unique role to fulfill. A God-given role. A God-appointed role. He is telling Esther, Esther, right now, at this very time, you have a wonderful opportunity to make an impact for the honor and glory of God. What Mordecai is saying to Esther is true of you and I today. What an opportunity we as God's people have to go forth in these days in which we live. And that'll be our subject this morning. A wonderful time of opportunity. The days in which you and I live provide us with a wonderful time of opportunity. Now, most are unfamiliar with the storyline of the book of Esther. Therefore, we'll begin with a brief background of Esther. As far as the background to the book, you would go back to the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. And you remember when Jehoiakim was king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, conquered and basically destroyed Jerusalem and carried into captivity not all of the people, but those that he deemed were the best of the people so he could train them. And he carried them into captivity some 800 miles away. And we all know that these would be in captivity for 70 years. But during the latter part of the captivity, the Babylonian Empire fell to the Persians. Soon afterward, Cyrus, the king of Persia, gave these captive Jews the opportunity to return to their homeland so that they could rebuild the temple. However, most of the captives chose not to return. Chose not to return to their homeland. The reason? They had become accustomed. They had become comfortable with Persian rule. So most of them decided to stay. And it's against that backdrop that the story of Esther unfolds. Chronologically, the book of Esther would take place between Ezra chapter 6 and Ezra chapter 7. But now, just some background leading up to our text. By the time we get to the book of Esther, Xerxes is the king of Persia. He now reigns over 127 provinces. We see that in chapter 1. The book opens, chapter 1, verse 3. In the third year of the reign of Xerxes. And chapter 1 tells us that Xerxes, we see the book opens with Xerxes putting on a six-month feast. That's quite a party. A six-month feast. He did this for all his princes and nobles and all the prominent citizens for the purpose of showing off his riches, showing off the riches of his kingdom, showing off his personal majesty. Following this six-month feast, there was another feast. This one lasted 7 days. You see all this in chapter 1. And on the seventh day, which would have been the last day of this second feast, Xerxes is drunk with wine. And in his drunken state, he ordered Vashti, his wife, the queen, to be brought out to display her body for all those who had gathered for this feast. Vashti refused. angered by her refusal. He carried out the suggestion of some of his officers and declared that Vashti was no longer queen. In other words, he divorced her. She's no longer queen. Then he ordered that a number of eligible young women be assembled so that he could choose who would be the next queen. By the providence of God, one of the minor officers of Xerxes was a Jew by the name of Mordecai. We read about him in our text. And according to chapter 2 and verse 7, he had adopted his orphan cousin. Her name was Hadassah. She's later called Esther. Hadassah is her Hebrew name. Esther is her Persian name. Mordecai arranged that Hadassah, or Esther, be among the young women from whom the queen would be chosen. Xerxes is immediately captivated by the beauty of Esther, and she was chosen to be queen. What does that mean? That means that in Persia, the queen is a Jew, all by the providence of God. Soon after she is chosen as queen, two of his officers had conformed a conspiracy to murder the king, to murder Xerxes. God allowed Mordecai to find out about the plot. And Mordecai advised Esther to report the matter to the king, which she did. An investigation was made, and as a result, the two plotters were hanged. We see that in chapter 2, verses 21 through 23. Later in chapter 3, and according to chapter 3, verse 7, we're now in the 12th year. Remember, the book began in the third year. We're now in the 12th year of the reign of Xerxes. Haman, one of the altars of Xerxes, was promoted above all the princes. And everyone in the kingdom was commanded to bow to Haman in reverence. Mordecai, being a Jew, refused to do so. And when the servants came to Mordecai and asked him, "Mordecai, why don't you bow to Haman?" He informed them that he was a Jew. Well, word of this got back to Haman that the reason Mordecai does not bow to you is because he is a Jew. This enraged Haman. And Haman plotted to kill every Jewish man, woman, boy, and girl in all the land of Persia. He then manipulated Xerxes the king to make a decree to have the Jews exterminated. We see that in chapter 3 and verse 7. The day of the extermination, or the day of the mass murder, was set to take place 11 months later. Chapter 3, verse 13. So time was short, as it is for you and I. Time was very short. They had 11 months before the decree would be carried out. From human appearance, God's people were facing extermination. So this was now a very critical time. This was a very critical time. It would be like you and I today. The President of the United States has signed a decree that every Christian shall be murdered 11 months from now. Well, that puts us in a critical time. That makes a very trying and difficult time. It was a threatening time. It was a very dangerous time. But most of all, what we need to gather from this is the time was short. And the time is short today. And because the time was short, it became a very pressing and urgent time. So that's the background leading up to our text. That mirrors the times in which you and I live today. Just as it was no accident that Esther lived in those times, we need to be mindful that it is no accident that you and I live in these days that we live in. It has all been arranged by God. You may not like the times in which you live. You bring that matter up to God, because this is the time God has placed us in. Well, I wish I would have lived 100 years ago. Well, you talk to God about that. You don't. You live today. These are the days that God has put us in. By reading the book of Esther, we see, especially from chapter 1, that it was a time when the kings and leaders of the nation were very selfish, were very wicked and immoral. We have very few patriots in political office today. Very few. In fact, I would question if there's any. They're very selfish. They're wicked. From reading chapter 1, it was a time of worldly pomp. It was a time of show. The king was drunk. It was a time of drunkenness. He ordered his wife to display her body before the men of the kingdom. It was a time of immodesty. It was a time of perversion. It was a time of great lewdness. He put her away. It was a time when the sanctity of marriage meant nothing. Sounds very familiar to the days in which we live. It was a time when human life was cheap. I mean, the leaders of the nation were willing to sign a decree to have a race of people killed because they did not bow to Haman. Life was cheap. And you know, we talk about Eastern countries and saying life means nothing to them. And that's true. Wake up. It doesn't mean much to us either. And by us, I mean the United States as a nation. Abortion. It was a time when God's people were in great danger. I mean, in 11 months, they were going to be put to death. So it was a time when they lived in the very midst of a death threat, which made it a time of great distress. And we, like Esther, have been placed in such times. Now notice the phrase in verse 14, and we've preached from this before, for such a time as this. And make application to our day. For such a time as this, when our society, our government, our courts have an utter disdain and hostility toward God, toward the things of God. And our government and the courts of our land are bent on eliminating God from every aspect of society at such a time as this. For such a time as this, when there is a brazen openness about sin, and when people are trying to force their sinful, their rebellious, their ungodly, filthy, vile, perverted lifestyles upon an entire society, for such a time as this, when there is little or no shame associated with evil, and people are proud of their sinful and ungodly ways, they dare you to say anything about it. For such a time as this, when you and I are inundated, we are surrounded with filth. You can't go anywhere where you don't see it. You can't turn on the television without seeing it. We are inundated and surrounded with filth and wickedness and that which is abominable to God. We are inundated with blasphemy and heresy. And if we're not careful, we, like the Jews under Persian rule, will become accustomed to it. In fact, it's already happening. For such a time as this, when society is overrun, and I mean overrun, with adultery, overrun with fornication, overrun with sodomy, overrun with bisexuality. And on top of that, these things are glamorized and forced upon us by Hollywood. Why any child of God would get caught up in following anybody in Hollywood is beyond me. These things are glamorized by the media. They're glamorized by large business. Get on the internet and look at all the large businesses that openly support sodomy. It's appalling. It is as the sewer has been opened. For such a time as this, when thinking is humanistic, atheistic, which goes hand in hand, and this kind of thinking and reasoning has engulfed every aspect of our society. And you know what's sad? Talk to almost any young person today. I said almost any. They're being swallowed up with that which is twisted and perverted. They are being swallowed up, and many adults have as well, with the fantasies and philosophies and the ideas of hell. And that is what is being spewed today. The philosophies of hell, the ideas of hell. And even some of God's people say, well, you know, that doesn't sound too bad. God help us. God help us. For such a time as this, when God's order, and God does have an order, when God's order for the sexes, when God's order for marriage, when God's order for the home is blatantly ignored and rejected and made a mockery of, These are the days in which you and I live. Such a time as this, when our children and our grandchildren have and are being robbed of the privilege of living in a morally sane society. That's been taken from them. All the children sitting here now, all the young adults, I don't mean to be discouraging, but you have been robbed of the opportunity of living in a morally sane society. Our society is insane. We've been robbed. Homes, marriages, and lives are being robbed and left to ruins. For such a time as this, days in which you and I live, when the dysfunctional is now the norm. It's now normal to be dysfunctional. When those who take a stand along biblical lines, they're going to be ridiculed, they're going to be hated, and they're going to be portrayed as ignoramuses and viewed as the enemy. What a day we live in. For such a time as this, when many of God's people have become accustomed to the times, as a result, they've become cold. They're careless. They're indifferent toward the things of God. Their hearts have been stolen. They've lost any earnestness they had for the Lord. It's gone. They've lost their passion. They've lost their zeal for the Lord. And the further we get in these last days, the more intense and widespread the chaos becomes. The more intense and widespread the threats and the dangers become. And the greater the challenges become for the child of God. For such a time as this, we have been placed by God to live in such a time as this. And we need to realize that right now we have a wonderful opportunity to show forth the glory of God. We have a wonderful opportunity to speak up for God. God's people have remained silent far too long. It's time to speak up, just as it was time for Esther to speak up. Again in our text, Mordecai, in the midst of a very critical time, in the midst of a very difficult time, living in a time of hatred toward the people of God, and Mordecai realizing the time is short, he's trying to convince his orphan cousin Esther to go before the king on behalf of the people of God. Again, he is saying to Esther, you are here for this time. You are in the place that you are for a God reason. And that's true of all of us. We are here at this time and in the places that we are in for a God reason. Again, Esther, her Persian name means star. A star is a light. A star is used for guidance. Esther, for such a time as this, you have the opportunity to shine as a star, to show forth the light of God. Her Hebrew name, Hadassah, means myrtle. which meant a pleasant fragrance. It was used to represent righteousness. And Mordecai is saying to her, Esther, this is your time. Hadassah, this is your time. And I imagine he called her by her name of Hadassah when he talked to her privately. And so it is with you and I. We have a wonderful opportunity in these days in which we live. Now, we can learn much from the examples of Mordecai and Esther to the news of this edict that all the Jews would be exterminated. And we want to close with looking at the response of Mordecai and Esther. Apply it to you and I today. We live in terribly sinful times. What is our response? We have to have a response. What is our response to the times in which we live? Notice the response of Mordecai. When news of the king's edict reached Mordecai, we read in chapter 4 and verse 1 that he rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and cried with a loud and bitter cry. We are told in verse 2 of chapter 4 that he did so at the king's gate. So there's Mordecai outside of the palace at the king's gate, clothed in sackcloth and ashes, weeping bitterly. We read in verse 3 that throughout the provinces of Persia, where these Jews were scattered, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing. And many lay in sackcloth and ashes. They wept for themselves. They wept for their spouses. They wept for their children. They wept for their grandchildren. They wept for their friends. No doubt, when they first heard this edict, there was fear. There was great distress. Mordecai's initial response to the times in which he now found himself in was great sorrow and grief of heart. But that's not where he stopped. Nor is it where you and I should stop. Yes, when we have a president that calls somebody and congratulates them for admitting they're homosexual, that ought to cause us great grief. That ought to cause us to weep. But we'd better not stop there, because that won't get anything done. And Mordecai did not stop there. We read in verse 4 that Esther's maids and her chamberlains, which were household managers, came and told it her. That is, they come to Esther and they say, Esther, Mordecai, he's outside of the gate, and he's clothed with sackcloth and ashes, and he's crying with a loud and bitter cry. It's very doubtful that Esther knew anything at this time of the edict. She lived in a very protected environment, away from the concerns of the so-called common people. So when she hears that Mordecai, her cousin is outside the king's gate in sackcloth and ashes, weeping bitterly. She wonders, what's going on? So she sends out clothing to Mordecai. We read in verse 4 that he received it not. In verse 5, Esther sent out one of her chamberlains named Hatak to Mordecai to find out what was wrong. Mordecai, why are you here? What's wrong? Why are you weeping at the king's gate? In verses 6 through 12, Hatak goes out to Mordecai. Mordecai informs him that of the edict to kill all the Jews. He even went so far as to give him a copy of the edict. And he said, I want you to show this copy of this edict to Esther, the queen. And he also sent word that Esther should go unto the king to make supplication unto the king and to make requests before him for the people. So Esther, here's a copy of the edict. All the Jews are going to be exterminated in 11 months. Esther, would you go before the king and plead on behalf of the king for the people of God and for the honor and glory of God? We read in verse 9 that Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. So there's a conversation going on between Esther and Mordecai through this servant Hatak. Esther then sent word back to Mordecai through Hatak, saying, Mordecai, I can't just walk in the king's office and speak my mind. That's not how it works. You see, Mordecai, if I were to do that, I have to be invited by the king to come into his presence. And Mordecai, I'll be honest with you, he hasn't invited me into his office for well over a month. And if I were to just walk in, the law says that he could put me to death. So what was Esther's initial response to the time she found herself in? Self-preservation. That was her initial response. Esther's initial response to Mordecai was, Mordecai, I don't like it, but I just got to go with the flow. Sadly, that's the response of many today. Oh, we don't like it, but that's the way it is. We read in verse 12 that her words were told to Mordecai. And I pray that this would not be our response to the times in which we live. Self-preservation. Go with the flow. After Mordecai received her response, he sent a more urgent message to Esther. It is recorded in verse 13 and 14. In his response, notice that Mordecai, in his grief and distress, remembered the promise of God. Notice verse 14. Just one part of verse 14. He is saying, Esther, if you choose to do nothing, then shall their enlargement, speaking of the Jews, God's people, and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. What's he doing there? He remembered that God would never forsake his people. He is holding on to the promise of God. Yes, he's weeping. But he didn't stop there. He's holding on to the promise of God. And he knew, just because God said so, that deliverance would come somehow, some way. He's holding on to the promise of God. Oh, and the news out of Washington, the news all around our land is sad, sad news. And there comes a time when God's people just need to hold on to the promises of God. Mordecai just didn't weep. He held on to the promises of God. And that's what we need at such a time as this. We need to hold on to the promises of God. When Mordecai said to Esther, "Thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this," again he's saying, "Esther, you are positioned exactly where God wants you for such a time as this. And Esther, you have an obligation. You have an obligation to fulfill. Not as the queen, but Esther, you have an obligation to fulfill as a child of God." May we never forget that. Because we are children of God, we that are saved, we have an obligation to fulfill. It doesn't matter what time we live in. We have an obligation. In Esther's return answer, we see, thank God, that she has gotten beyond her initial response, which was self-preservation. Notice verse 15. She asks Mordecai to pray, and we see that she was stirred to pray. She said, "Gather the people together and fast and pray for me, and I and my maidens will do the same." She is now stirred to pray. For such a time as this that you and I live in, oh, how we need to be stirred to fall on our faces before God. Many times our initial response to news in our land is anger. And we'll go on for days. Did you hear what so-and-so said? And just angry as can be. Would we not be better off, as soon as our president congratulates somebody for being a sodomite, that we fall on our faces before God and begin to pray? We need to get beyond our initial responses. Our anger towards Washington is not going to do us one bit of good. But I'll tell you what will: to be stirred to pray. And I'm telling you, in a time such as this, if God's people aren't stirred to pray, they never will be. We need to be praying. Need to be praying that God would change lives. Need to be praying that the chains of sin would be broken. Need to be praying for the showers of blessing to come down. Oh, how we need to pray for our children. Oh, how we need to pray for moms and dads, for one another. How we need to pray for marriages and homes and for pastors and churches. We need to be a praying people. We need to be stirred to pray. We also see, not only was she stirred to pray, she was aroused from her comfort zone. You see, Esther had been a hidden believer. She was living the comfortable life, the queen of an empire. But she is brought to see, I can't be satisfied with this. I can't be satisfied with being the queen. I'm a child of God, and I can't be satisfied with the status quo. We, the saved by grace, living in the last days of the last days, need to be moved out of any comfort zone that we have snuggled into. We need to be moved to be a people with a God-given passion, a God-given zeal, a God-given boldness and courage. We need to be moved to have some backbone, some fortitude, some resolve, some perseverance to be and to do what God would have us to do and to be for such a time as this. We also see in her words, talking about her response now, she's gotten beyond her initial response. And oh, that all of God's people who are caught up in self-preservation, that you'd get beyond that and realize that the time is short. We don't have much longer. There's much at stake. And we need to be stirred. And we see, she finally says, after she's prayed and fasted, so will I go unto the king. And if I perish, I perish. Mordecai, I'm going to go to the king uninvited. And if he kills me, he kills me. In other words, Mordecai, I'm going to do this if it's the last thing I do. I'm going to do this. Esther is brought to see that the cause of God is worthy of all. That it is worthy of her life. When will God's people be brought to see that the cause of God is worthy of everything? It's worthy of all. Esther is now brought to that point. She's brought from concern for her own safety and well-being to see that God's cause is greater than her own life. Oh, when will God's people in mass be brought to see that the cause of God is bigger than you and I? I've got news for you. It might upset some folks. If you were to leave the church tomorrow, Home Baptist Church will continue on, because it's bigger than you. If I were to leave tomorrow, it would continue on, because it's bigger than me. When will we realize it's not about us? It's about God. In her words here, so will I go unto the king, and if I perish, I perish. That's surrender. That's commitment. And right now, at such a time as this, God's people are referred to as the light of the world and the salt of the earth. And God has placed us in this time to be what? Light. Light. And the darker the night, the more recognizable the light. We ought to be recognized very clearly by the world. They're not like us. Praise God. I don't want the world ever to say, well, you're just like I am.
I don't want to be normal. As far as the world is concerned. But right now, oh, what an opportunity we have to be light. What an opportunity we have to be used of God. God help us to realize that one day soon, the time is short, we're going to be delivered from this mess. But in the meantime, as long as we're here, we have an opportunity. We have an obligation to be what God would have us to be. To do what God would have us to do. Yes, there's a lot of things that go on in the days in which we live that we're not happy about. But may we realize that in these times, God has given you and I an opportunity to show forth His honor and glory. And may we never, ever forget why we're here. I'm not here. You're not here to change Washington. We're here to shine forth God, to show forth the honor and the glory of God. That's why we're here. To be a testimony for God. We're not here to have a good time. We're not here to blend in with the world as the Jews did with the Persians. They just sort of blended in after a while. And we all have to some degree. Ashamedly so, we all have blended in to some degree. God help us. God help us to realize why we're here. May we never forget it. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry will lead us in singing. 54.